Future Commerce is brought to you by Link. Link makes your customers' post-purchase experience something they love through breakthrough innovation in artificial intelligence. Be sure to stick around to the middle of the show for a special offer. You can visit Link online today at letslink.com/podcast. That's letslink.com/podcast.
Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
I'm Philip. That's good.
And today, we have an amazing guest on the show, Brett Curry of OMG Commerce. Brett is a SEO and paid search veteran who's written some pretty unbelievable articles, published on a Shopify blog and other places. He's had his own show in the past, and maybe has an exciting announcement today as well. So we're excited to have Mr. Brett Curry on the show. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Brett.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Yeah, hey.
And as always, we want you to give us feedback about today's show. So please leave us some feedback in the discuss comment box on our site or anywhere else that you can interact with us. You can also subscribe to listen to Future Commerce on iTunes and Google Play, or listen right from your Amazon Echo or on TuneIn Radio with the phrase Alexa, play Future Commerce podcast. With that, Brett, why don't you give us a little history about yourself, how you got into this space, and let our listeners know who you are.
Absolutely. So do you want like the true version or the version that I use when I'm trying to impress someone?
Really impress us. Yeah. Okay. Play it up. We want to hear it.
Yeah. I don't know that I could do that at all, but yeah. So, I'm a marketing junkie. Started my first marketing company in 2002 and then my first SEO campaign in 2004. And kind of got hooked on SEO at the time, doing things that no longer work today at all, but had some success for a printing business, got them to page one for the search term brochure. So I thought I was a real SEO rock star at the time. And I did get hooked on it at that time. So then in 2010, started Online Marketing Giant with my business partner, Chris Brewer. And then we launched OMG Commerce, which is our e-commerce division. So been working with e-commerce companies pretty closely since 2010, 2011, and really just continuing that passion for paid search and SEO. And really started getting into Google Shopping around the time it switched from Frugal, the free version to the paid version that it is today. And have since, we've kind of become thought leaders and experts, so to speak, at Google Shopping, put together the Ultimate Google Shopping Guide with the folks at Shopify, and get to speak at RCE on the topic and going to again here in 2017. And so marketing is like my true passion. I'm a J. Abraham fan of old, and even like did copywriting and studied direct mail back in the day. And so I really just love marketing and what makes people tick and what makes people respond to things. But I love the impact that search has. I've always been fascinated by things that work, right? So you put out a message or engage in a marketing campaign and it drives results. Like that's what's really fun for me. And so that's probably why I like Google Shopping so much. I've never seen anything that works quite as consistently or as well as Google Shopping. And so that's kind of the quick background. And I'm trying to live up to you guys and kind of follow in your footsteps and hopefully launch a successful podcast of my own. And so nice. that's the quick story.
Yeah. We're super excited about
that. As somebody
who's
sort of unaffiliated or doesn't really what do you think, is it Online Marketing Giant? Or can I just say OMG? Am I allowed to say OMG?
Yeah. Everybody calls it OMG. And so that's why when we launched our e-commerce division, it's just OMG Commerce.
Okay.
So everybody calls us OMG or OMG Commerce. Yeah.
So you mentioned Shopify there and Shopify being, obviously the sort of juggernaut now that sort of kind of cornered the market. Massive, successful, huge IPO, last year. You know, what is it? 250,000 stores now, running on Shopify. You know, when you look at commerce at scale like that, at scale, and especially on a hosted platform, how much really can OMG do today? I know this is future commerce, and we'll kind of get there, but I want to, just because I don't really know, what's the kind of thing that I could do as a merchant, or what the kind of thing that OMG could provide to me, even if I'm on like a hosted platform like that? Because my sense is typically companies that specialize in that really sort of specialize in platforms that are sort of the BYOB type thing, where you have to install a bunch of stuff to make it work, and you create a bunch of campaigns and landing pages and blah, blah, blah. So kind of give me an idea of what you guys do.
Yeah, it's a great question. And first of all, I mean, we love the guys at Shopify, and the way they're innovating and improving is awesome. And the amount of merchants that are getting onto the platform is pretty staggering. The growth is pretty phenomenal. We are platform agnostic, though. I mean, we have a ton of clients on Magento and a few on, you know, a handful of other platforms. So we're agnostic there. But, you know, really, regardless of the platform, first of all, good marketing, a good UX, you know, that all matters, of course. But even if you have a hosted solution and things are set up well from an organic search standpoint, still, you know, if you just kind of throw the switch on, right, turn the site on and leave it, you're going to be under optimized or under leveraged in what you're able to do. And so we help companies with content marketing and, you know, getting the right strategy for paid search. It's interesting, and I know we'll get into it, but, you know, paid search and SEO are not really sexy at all anymore, and then don't even maybe seem even that interesting, right? This is future commerce, and we're talking about SEO. What? This is crazy. But it still drives just huge amounts of traffic and volume, and, you know, often it's the number one, number two traffic source for e-commerce merchants, and that likely won't change anytime soon. And so we help companies, you know, form a roadmap for organic search and paid search, and then we help execute those campaigns. Yeah.
So
it's also still Google's primary source of revenue. So
Totally.
And I think that's sort of the thing that's kind of interesting to me is, you know, one of the things we sort of founded this podcast on was the principle that, as commerce changes, as commerce evolves, and as the places that we engage in commerce change, and they move away from the web, or they move away from these things like shopping carts in particular, where there it's sort of this real world analog to a thing that we do virtually in real life, you know, like taking something, putting it in your shopping cart and pushing it around to categorized, you know, loosely grouped categories of items in rows and putting those things in your cart and pushing it to a checkout and paying and, you know, in some cases shipping or picking up. Those are all real world analogs. But when you're talking about, you know, one click mobile purchases, or you're talking about, you know, voice commerce or conversational commerce, those things don't really have analogs. And I'm curious if you, you know, what your company sees in, you know, in a Google Shopping, how do you see that sort of translates today? Or how do you see yourself preparing for continued fragmentation of places where people continue to search and where people continue to consume information, where there's not necessarily a very obvious avenue for you to get your message or help businesses get their message in front of the consumer?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating question, and really, you know, knowing exactly how things are going to pan out or play out, or how quickly things are going to evolve is—it's hard to say. But but things are changing very rapidly. I think a couple of things. You know, it's still critical, and I would say more important now than ever to build a brand, right? And that sounds maybe a little old school as well, but like building this brand that people know and trust and like, and becoming a destination and something that people think about when they think about your product or service, that's still really critical. I think.
But you mean good business is important?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? But it's so interesting, like, as you, you know, and I know you guys are the same way, as you get into this online space and get to know people in the e-commerce community, like, stuff in e-commerce is still largely driven by relationships and who you know and things like that, you know. So even as we're looking at future commerce and things that are changing and, you know, AI and machine learning and wearables and implicit commerce and all those things, which are fascinating, and I love talking about them. You know, there's still good business matters and relationships matter and things like that. But, you know, a few of the things that we're looking at is, you know, where should you be? So what makes sense as a company? So looking at all the channels that you should be in. So does it make sense to be on Amazon? You know, if you're looking at product search, Amazon still controls, you know, 40, 45% of that or thereabouts. So does it make sense to have a presence on Amazon? If you're looking at product listing ads, which we are, you know, huge fans of, and that's where we spend a lot of our time, you know, as Google's looking at maybe a purchase with Google, you know, where you check out and buy your goods right there on Google without ever getting to a merchant site, you know, does that make sense or not? I think there's some benefits there, right? You kind of want to go where the traffic is and go where the consumers are, but there are some disadvantages there as well, right? I don't really want someone to buy my product on Google without coming to my site. I'd rather them come to my site and buy multiple things, right? Like load up that that basket or that cart with multiple things. And so part of it is just figuring out, okay, where do we need to be now? Like, where are the consumers now? Where do we need to be? And then, yeah, how do we plan for some of these things that are changing and moving rapidly? One thing I found, and I know you're probably the same way, Philip, like sometimes you just have to go and solve whatever problems are staring you in the face, you know, and what kind of the quick and easy wins. Mm-hmm. And so we find ourselves spending a lot of time doing that at this point.
I just wonder.
It makes sense.
I'll let Brian actually take over from here. I'm just, this is sort of in my headspace of, I sort of live in this constant fear of the pace of adoption is so fast, and the market is changing so fast in so many ways. You know, I could, you know, spout off a bunch of Black Friday, Cyber Week, Monday numbers right now. It's not important. I think we all know where things are going. But I think there's an early estimate of Alexa devices sold for holiday 2016 is like nearing 20, 25 million Alexa-enabled devices sold.
Crazy.
And that's bonkers. Like that's incredible. And so I kind of live in that sort of bubble of fear that this stuff is happening faster than anyone really understands. It's what the market wants and what the market demands, and even Google doesn't realize it yet. Google's 22 months late to this game too, and they don't understand how to monetize a voice search. There is no such thing as AdWords for voice. Is that something that people would even tolerate? Those are the questions that I have, because I'm starting to get Joe Blow store asking if they should be creating an Alexa app, and that's just insane to me.
Right, exactly. Like, I think your question is very in line with what I was going to ask too, Philip, which is essentially, I think the where people are searching and are going to be purchasing is changing so rapidly. What I'd like to kind of hear you elaborate on, Brett, is what some of those channels are, and then maybe some tips on like how to know where you belong, where you fit in. The only way to, like as Philip was saying, the only way to engage with Alexa right now is to build a skill. But what about some of the other channels? What are some of the other ways they can engage? And where do you kind of see the majority of searches headed, or will it actually stay fragmented? I think these are all questions a lot of people are asking. So if you've got any insight, we're all ears.
Yeah. I mean, it's super interesting. And you know, I guess the way I would look at it is a couple of different ways. The emergence of the Alexa devices is super fascinating. And I have seen really good reviews on the Google Home device, but you're right, they're late to the party, and Alexa's got a pretty big head start. I've seen kind of the head-to-head comparisons, though. You do the voice search with Alexa versus Google Home, and Google Home usually does better, but that doesn't necessarily mean doesn't mean that, you know, Alexa's got the market share right now for sure. What is interesting, you know, and again, you know, my background is search, and that's kind of where I spend most of my time. So I tend to think in those realms. But, you know, obviously we know that the mobile search has now surpassed desktop search, yeah, and even just mobile usage of the web is now greater than desktop usage of the web in general, which is not a surprise to anybody. But thinking of voice, and you're right, there are no ads if you're asking Alexa something or Google Home. But with your phone, you know, like 20-25% now of mobile queries are done via voice. And so thinking about the implications there. So if I'm searching on my phone for something, researching a product, I'm maybe looking for reviews, I'm asking questions, whatever. You know, 20-25% of the searches on a mobile phone are done by voice. And it's interesting, if you look at those voice queries or those voice searches, they are different than when you're typing something in. You know, when you're typing in a query, it's often one or two words. When you're using your voice, it's often a complete sentence or a question. And so thinking about that, and how do we structure our content in such a way that it'll be seen as relevant for maybe those voice queries, and being able to capitalize on that. And so, you know, in looking at where things are going, I still don't see a world in the immediate future where you're not going to be searching for at least some things. I think for a lot of your staple goods, you know, like I've started using the, you know, Amazon reorder, whatever it's called, I forgot.
Dash.
Yeah, super convenient, right? So like my protein powder and then the green stuff that I make these really nasty looking shakes that my wife hates, but they're actually quite good. All that comes to me, I don't even think about it. You know, it just happens. I think a lot of our staple products are going to be taken care of via implicit commerce and maybe just doing reorders and stuff. And like, that's kind of scary. You know, once I start reordering now, I'm not really looking for new protein powder or new green stuff that I mix in. So that's certainly interesting. But I don't ever see a day when we're not going to be at least searching for some things, right? So searching for new apparel or new gear or new whatever, and researching and studying it and trying to figure out, you know, what is the best tent that I should buy as I go on my camping trip and things like that. So, I think I would still go back to search to a large degree, but I think you've also got to consider some of those other places like Amazon and some other sources as well.
Is there any way for you to as a merchant or even as a marketer to see or segment traffic or segment your analytics to see the kinds of queries that come in over voice search and maybe cater to those customers specifically?
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly run your search query report and, you know, look in Search Console and start to get a good idea of what those searches are. You know, I think another way to kind of mine that is even to look at your on-site search. So to look at your search data when someone lands on your page and what are they searching for. That's something you can look through. And then, you know, even talk to some merchants that if they have got phone support or phone staff, even just, you know, hey, what are the questions? How do people phrase things when they're calling in and asking, you know, for clarification or a question about a product, and using some of that data as well to influence, you know, the way you create your FAQs and the way you create some of your content pages and things like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Nice. Brian, you were saying something.
No, I mean, I think Brett kind of dug into it. I think his answer to my question, and I think my question, I've asked this before, kind of in the AR VR realm, but I think merchants are presented with so many choices right now, and like you were saying, Brett, I think we find ourselves going back to sort of the low hanging fruit stuff we know can help immediately, instead of, you know, attempting all kinds of things where the ROI is not quite as clear. And so continuing to focus on search. Now search, you know, let's get back to that for a second, is changing, no doubt, with the application of AI. And I know you've got a little insight there, Brett, but like query intent and, you know, how is that playing into SEO and how businesses should think about, you know, their approach to optimizing their sites?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I do want to preface this, and I know I've already said this, but just to emphasize, I'm a marketing guy, so I'm not like, so as we get into too deep of AI or machine learning stuff, I'm definitely in over my head. But looking at, you know, Rank Brain, and it's something that's kind of fascinating to read about and look at. It's Google kind of announced this maybe year and a half ago, something like that. And it's now the third most important signal in their search algorithm. So determining, you know, how they rank pages, Rank Brain is now the third most important, most powerful signal. And really, Rank Brain is all about Google better understanding query intent and knowing what someone means when they type in a particular search. And it's interesting. And I remember when I first heard that, I was like, well, Google's always been good at that, right? Google's always been scary good at when I type in a couple words and they know just what I mean. But in the past, that was still always pretty dependent on human interaction and on engineers working with and manipulating quite a bit. There's, you know, always some learning going on in the system. But Rank Brain now is, you know, kind of fully AI and machine learning with the idea that it's just getting better and better at understanding language and intent. And so a couple things, and it, you know, Google's even said they don't know all of the ways that it works, right? Because it is truly a machine learning program and it's going to learn over time and change over time. But it looks like one of the largest drivers of what Rank Brain's going to look at is organic click-through rate. Right. So the percentage of people that see your organic listing. So I'm doing a search looking for handbag or running shoes or whatever. I see your organic listing. How many people click on that? And, you know, Google's always done that on the paid search side, right, with quality score. And so the Google looks at, you know, what's the quality score of your ad? And that's going to help determine your ad rank, you know, quality score times max CPC is your ad rank. And so, you know, Rank Brain is going to look a lot at your the click-through rate of a particular query. So if I'm typing in, you know, what is the best, you know, waterproof sleeping bag, something like that, Google's rate of those organic listings, and that's going to influence what ranks next for that query. So I think kind of what can a merchant do then? It's looking at how can we craft our pages and use language that really speaks to the customer, that answers their question, that when they see our title tag and our description, they say, ah, that's what I'm looking for. And then also making the data clear to Google, right? Looking at things like schema.org, you know, structured data, which we can get into a little bit if you guys would like. So yeah, that's kind of a little bit about Rank Brain.
That's really exciting stuff. I think the end result is that, you know, consumers really get matched up with things that they really want. And I know Google's been doing that really well for a long time, like you said, but as machine learning sort of takes over, hopefully we'll be matched with even more complex results that you know, that I guess answer maybe some of our more complex questions, I should say, results that answer our more complex questions, i.e. like sometimes when I search for cheap vacations, right, or something like that, I'm not actually necessarily looking for the cheapest vacation. I'm looking for a cheap vacation that, you know, that I'm really looking for a vacation that fits in my budget and I want the most value for that budget. And so I think, you know, as we get closer to this and we're able to kind of talk as we search and really make it more like almost like a, you know, interacting with a person, then yeah, we're going to be able to get the types of results that that really do help us the way that we want to be helped. So
I just had this experience. You used a really interesting and very relevant example for me because I just had this experience. I feel like I'm pretty good with money. Maybe I'm not as good as I should be, but I have zero understanding or budget around a vacation because I'm not usually taking a vacation with a destination in mind. I'm not saying I need to go to Rome. I'm going to Rome. Show me the cheapest Rome. That's not usually how I'm looking for a vacation. I don't know where I want to go on vacation. I have no idea. I just know I want to go somewhere. I don't want it to be here, and I have no idea what I'm going to spend on it. You have to sell me on why I should spend X amount of money, and then I'll see, well, is that something I can afford? Is it something that's worth, that I've assigned a value that's worth it to me? Yeah. And I think that that sounds very, very much like trade-off analytics, which I think we had spoken about, which is an IBM sort of technology that they're a branded Watson technology.
But yeah, back in the Tom Roberts show.
Yeah, episode 5. So that's actually what you're touching on there, Brett, is a very human characteristic that we don't have an exact commerce experience for right now, which is to say that some people, I think Tom used a really good example of like a cell phone. Like if you're standing in a store and somebody says, well, you know, oh, you want to spend $300, but if you spend $350, you can get twice the battery life. That's a trade-off I think most people are reasonably looking to, would be able to stretch their budget to make because they see the benefit in it. And I think that for a lot of SEO or a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of taking into account right now, especially in the commerce experiences we have today, of the types of trade-offs people would make if they perceive a higher value associated to the thing they're getting. Link is the best way to get your customers coming back to buy again. Link's Cortex AI platform creates rich relationships with every customer at every touch point on every platform. From Magento to Shopify, Hybris and Demandware, over 300 logistic and reverse logistic carriers around the world are integrated with Link. Link brings your brand to where customers are on Facebook Messenger, Alexa, SMS, and more. Let Link add the power of artificial intelligence to your business. For a limited time, Future Commerce listeners can claim an exclusive trial offer for 30 days free of Link Cortex. Sign up today and visit them online at letslink.com/podcast. That's letslink.com/podcast.
Totally agree.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that's really changing the way we can kind of manipulate and improve paid search, and certainly this is influencing organic search as well, is, you know, Google just knowing more about you and knowing your click behavior and what you're doing online and personalizing search results, you know, to a certain degree, and actually becoming more personalized. And so that's something, you know, that we're working on a lot on the paid search side, is kind of going beyond just the query, right? Mm-hmm. And looking at, okay, so we've historically always built our AdWords campaigns around keywords, right? So these are the keywords people are searching for, that's we're going to build all our stuff around. But now you can layer in so much additional data, things like remarketing lists, right? So you can take, hey, if someone has been to my YouTube page or watched a video or they've been to my website, now I can add that list into my search campaigns a bit differently. Or what's relatively new, this just came out of beta a couple months ago, I think, where you can actually take now demographic data and layer that into search. So I'm not just wanting to start, like for example, we've got a client that sells educational games, educational toys, and they know that their consumer is largely a mom or a grandmother or an aunt, usually making six figures or higher. So, you know, you can start to look at, okay, yes, we want to show up for things like educational games, educational toys, but really only if someone kind of fits in these demographics, you know, and in this type of consumer. So it's not just the query now, it's also some data about the person as well. And so I think that that kind of data might help identify someone like you, Philip, where you're looking at, hey, this is someone looking for a vacation, but we know this about their click behavior and demographics and things like that. So this is the person we want to go after. And also our message is going to be a little bit different for that person.
Hmm.
Yeah, and actually, I was just thinking about this. Google Optimize was just released as well. Have you had a chance to play with that at all?
I'm sorry, play with what?
Google Optimize.
I have not experimented with Google Optimize very much. I know one of my team members has, but I don't have much experience with that.
Oh, it was just released. So, I mean, it's something that not many people have a lot of experience with yet. But I'm just curious, and I'm sure that, you know, as you get further in, to see how closely they end up tying Optimize scores and results back through to search. I know I just kind of turned the conversation a little bit there, but this popped into my mind. I feel like that will probably end up being a good part of the strategy as well. Are a big part of what Google is going to require you to ultimately rely on.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I mean, the speed at which Google, comes up with new beta programs and releases them, and it's pretty staggering. And so, yeah, knowing exactly what's going to really take off and be useful and what's not is pretty tricky to predict. But yeah, I'll definitely keep my eye on that one. It sounds very interesting.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, you know, it plays into something that is definitely getting more pervasive and will continue to grow, which is A/B testing and then ultimately personalization and how that plays into search as well. Like you might have very similar content or content that is around a specific product that you've developed for a specific demographic. That, you know, you only serve up to that demographic, and therefore now you've got, you know, a single product that's got multiple sets of data, and it helps you cater and demonstrate why the value of that product exists for those different demographics, and you're serving that up mm-hmm. based on maybe on search or data that comes into Google that you already have, or Facebook or where Amazon or whatever, you know, whatever the platform is, but you're able to leverage that and change how you present your brand based off of that. It's definitely something that I'm excited about.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when you look at AdWords, and you know, there's been a feature around forever now, dynamic keyword insertion, you know, where you can tell AdWords that, hey, whatever the search is that the person types in, or whatever keyword actually you have in your that you're bidding on that matches someone's search query, put that keyword, make that the headline. So if I'm looking for best leather sofas, you know, that becomes the headline of the ad. And that's been around for a while. And it can work. It's interesting though, a lot of people use that as a crutch. They think, well, let's just do that because that's easier than writing a good headline, right? And it actually turns out that usually if you sit down and think about a good headline, you craft a good headline, that actually gets a better click-through rate than dynamic keyword insertion.
Interesting.
But you can now begin to say, okay, if someone is searching for this keyword on mobile, I want this to be my headline. If someone is searching on desktop, I want this to be my headline. Or if someone falls into this criteria, I want this to be the headline. And that I think is really smart. You know, we've got a client that sells high-end furniture. And so, you know, leather sofas and bedroom sets, but super expensive stuff. And so, you know, we'd kind of like to start targeting people that are just looking for leather sofas, right? But is that someone looking for the lowest end leather sofa or someone that's willing to spend, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 on a leather sofa? And so being able to layer in some of that additional data that Google now has available just makes a ton of sense.
Totally agree. Nice. Well, man, I feel like I'm learning a lot, and this is definitely a really engaging conversation. But
what do you see as what do you think is something that we're sort of over invested in right now? I don't know if that's like proprietary, you know, information, but I feel like there's a lot of things that we spend a lot of time investing in, you know, as merchants, and there has to be something that you feel like is not worth the investment, or something that's like sort of lived past its prime.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating question. I love it. I think one of the things, so let's talk about the organic side of search. And really, if you look at organic search and trying to get more traffic from the search engines, I think that mainly goes back to content, right? Creating good content and content marketing and engaging content and things like that. I think people, for the most part, merchants have that all wrong, right? So you talk to a merchant about, we need to rank better organically. And so they say, okay, well, that means I've got a blog, right? And so I've got a, well, if I'm going to blog, I got to blog weekly, right? Or I've got to do 3 blogs a week. And
right.
So it's just like about this content churn. You know, if you're going to do it right, you got to, you know, it's a quantity of content. I even saw some posts recently about, you know, how some major publications are posting like hundreds of different things a day and how that's, you know, the way you should do it. I think for merchants, though, it's really more about looking at what are the questions people are asking that we could answer maybe better than anybody else. And maybe we just create a few pieces, like just a few pieces of content, but then we're really pushing people to those. And we're putting a lot of advertising effort behind it, some social effort behind it. And a good friend of mine, Russ Henneberry, he runs content for Digital Marketer. And they talk about a full funnel strategy and having like top of funnel content, mid funnel content, bottom of funnel content. And so just thinking about like, hey, maybe we just need a couple of pieces at each step of the funnel that are well crafted. And maybe it's a video, or maybe it's a blog or an infographic or something like that. But maybe it's just one or two pieces that really convinces people and answers their objections and causes them to believe something that makes them say, hey, maybe I do need that product. And so I think this notion of, hey, I just need to get in this content churn because that's what everybody's doing and what everybody's saying so that I can rank better organically. I really don't think that's necessary for a lot of people. That can work, but I think for the average merchant, that might not be the best way to go. So that's certainly at the top of my list.
Yeah, I think there's probably some sort of a balance there because, like, I think that a lot of people that I've seen, they sit there and they analyze our content and then they analyze it again and they kind of get into content freeze mode. So I think it's a really strong balance. And obviously, it depends on your organization, but I think it's important to recognize sort of the balance between pushing new contents and getting it right or perfect, I should say.
And there's definitely a case to be made to having a large amount of good content. But yeah. I think when you start talking about content marketing and SEO, a lot of e-commerce merchants freeze up and they don't know where to begin, or they just start with the wrong premises, right? They start with, I've got to create a ton of content rather than,
got it,
let's just create some good content first, right? And drive some eyeballs to it, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, no, I do not disagree with that.
What is nice. I actually have to ask sort of another little oddball question here, which is there's a lot of interesting automation that may be happening in the content space here. I was talking about like sort of the future of search. I saw some you talked about, you know, content strategy as being, you know, hundreds of articles per day. And I'm seeing more and more and more, especially around in sort of the stock tip or stock reporting avenue, and in sports too, where we just have AI and machine learning algorithms just outputting reports of the day based on, you know, activity or stats. And they tell pretty convincing stories. If you do fantasy football at all, it reads like a like a human wrote it. Like, they're some compelling stories that are specific to your fantasy football team, compelling stories around stocks that moved, and they're really, it tells your story of your particular portfolio. I think that's really interesting there. What do you have any thoughts around sort of that future of content generation being more automated and having less of a shelf life? This isn't evergreen content. It's meant to be consumed the same day. It has very short expiration. Like, you know, it's meant to be consumed in the moment that it's relevant and never again. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, it's certainly for media companies that is right on. You know, the content is hot for a day or for a few minutes, and then you know it passes. I know there's a gentleman named Dan Thies who talks about this as well. And he's got a program and some information that I can't remember the name of it, but certainly looking at, you know, content curation. And so, yeah, how can we pull in kind of the best of certain topics from across the web and curate that on our site, or pull that in on our site and either add some commentary to it or add some automation to it, or maybe then encourage users to comment on it and add their own spin to that content. Certainly that's not something we do. So for me to say this is how you should do it, I would totally be speaking over my head. But I do see that taking place. And there probably is a place for that, you know, curating content, adding either some commentary of your own to it, or encouraging some user-generated content that would add some commentary to that. So yeah, I think there's definitely some potential there.
I see maybe a really interesting future, and if anyone creates a business around this, you owe me some money. But I see a really interesting future around taking that content generation strategy and applying it to you know, marketplace sort of content generation. I think you pair that with, you know, a lot of this image recognition technology that's now available through things like AWS, and you can have a really engaging sort of self-authoring sites that are generated based on your marketplace strategy as a merchant, which could, you know, potentially you're standing up these standalone stores that, you know, are really just your direct channel, but not necessarily a direct channel that you even have anything to do with curating. They're things that are, you know, based on, you know, data around the product and based on, you know, maybe some syndicated manufacturer reviews or something to that effect. We can create engaging content that, you know, might be interesting to a consumer. It seems like consumers want this. We sure consume a lot of content that's automatically generated that we don't know that is automatically generated, unless you're in the know. So I maybe that's a particularly interesting future. I just don't know. Once we have machines writing our content and machines indexing the content, we get into this really weird space of how do we, like, are we even necessary to the process anymore?
Right. Yeah. And I would argue that we always will be because of the strategy piece and the, you know, just being able to think and reason like a like a human, but maybe I'm being too idealistic. I'm not sure, but you know, I think one thing like just looking at curation of content, or even like take product reviews, right? So in e-commerce, I mean, that's arguably the most important pieces of content you can have on your site is just reviews from actual consumers and users, and so you know the ability to curate and aggregate reviews from multiple channels, you know, so, and there are services that do this. It'll pull your product reviews from Amazon and other channels and your website, pull those all together. I mean, stuff like that, I think is super useful. And then looking at how do we then pull other useful content that's related to our subject and curate that and aggregate that, put that on our site and using some syndication or automation. Yeah. I think it's certainly has merit and is worth considering, because yeah, we can't do it all by hand at this point.
Mm. Interesting. Fascinating stuff. Brian, do you have any last sort of thoughts? I want you to give Brett an opportunity to sort of share some final closing thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. I think you have a few of those, Brett. Maybe talk about WordStream a little bit, the WordStream study. But I did want to ask about mobile. Obviously, mobile is still continuing to grow. Responsive design has been, a game changer in terms of engaging with mobile content. Do you have any? It's still maturing though. And you know, Benedict Evans put out his update on mobile's eating the world recently, which was a pretty nice study. I don't think we've covered it all on the show yet. But just wondering if you have any. new insights, given that, you know, we're probably 3 or 4 years in here where mobile and e-commerce have really started to hit their stride. You know, do you have any tips or tricks or strategies for addressing mobile that are different than, say, you know, your standard desktop searches or, you know, other types of searches? So, I'll let you dive into that.
Yeah, you bet. And you know, it's really interesting how, you know, and you guys, I'm sure, saw it, and most listeners saw it, that Google is now saying that in 2017, they're going to consider the mobile index first. So they're going to look at the mobile index of pages, and that's going to carry more weight than the desktop index of pages. And so on the organic side, you know, there was a, I'm so bad with dates, but it was in spring of a year or two ago, you know, Mobilegeddon, Google talked about, got to be mobile optimized. And really it wasn't that, it was like this spooky warning, but really the impact of it wasn't nearly as huge as some people predicted or as big as it sounded. But now it looks like that's really coming, right? Where Google's saying, yeah, the mobile index, that's what we're going to primarily pay attention to. So looking at your mobile pages and how well optimized they are is 100% critical. You know, it's tough though. So we manage a lot of paid search campaigns. That's a huge part of what we do as a company. And, you know, now you've got mobile traffic, mobile searches are greater than desktop searches. But the tricky part is mobile conversion rates are not there, right? Mobile conversion rates are half to a third of what they're on desktop. So now we've got more people searching on mobile, but then when they get to our site on mobile, they're not converting as much. And part of that is just, I think, the nature of what someone's doing on their phone. Maybe they never intended to purchase. They're just researching. Part of it could be that the mobile experience is not as good, right? But one thing also to add to that, because I think this is important, is that just the total number of searches are also increasing. So if you look at, I looked at a statistic that in 2016, the number of searches are double what they were in 2012. And it's a crazy number, like 2 trillion searches a year or something. That's a number you can't even really wrap your head around, right? But double the searches today that there were in 2012 even. And so even though, you know, so there's a lot more desktop searches today than there were last year as well. And so I think you have to look at your bidding strategy. So if you're looking at the paid search side, you know, what is your bidding strategy for mobile? Because you know they're probably not going to convert as well, but you have to be there. So what's your bidding strategy? That's super important. And did you have a question, Brian, or were you just like giving me?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, actually, was that overall searches that have doubled since 2012?
Correct. Yep, total number of searches. Yep.
It's possible that desktop didn't increase at all. Because, and there's probably easy ways to get this data, but if we're, you know, that number probably includes mobile and voice. And, you know, if you look at voice searches, 25% of searches on, and I guess this sort of counts as a desktop search, but 25% of searches through the Windows toolbar in, I think, 2015 were through voice, or maybe it was 16, were through voice search on Windows 10. And so, you know, I just wonder, with the growth of mobile since 2012, of course the number of searches are going to go up. The number of people that had devices that could search went up by a lot, and it was almost all mobile. And so it is possible that, and it'd be probably pretty easy to validate this, it's very possible that the majority, if not all of the growth, was just mobile and voice.
Yeah, I mean, no question about it that mobile is growing at a faster rate than desktop, and mobile search has even overtaken desktop. In terms of all the growth coming from mobile versus desktop, I don't know the percentages there. I would guess probably, and this is just thinking anecdotally, we would need to confirm, but I mean, if you think about your own behavior, we probably all just search more on all devices. But yeah, the majority of that growth has got to be coming from mobile devices. And so, you know, looking at, and so thinking about mobile ads as an example, you know, if you conduct a search for a product on your phone, now with the expanded text ad, so text ads that are basically 50% larger than legacy text ads and AdWords, and the product listing ads being very prominent there on mobile, you've got to do a little bit of scrolling before you even get to the organic side of you know, mobile search. And so you've got to be there on the paid side, but with the mobile conversion rates being lower, you know, how do you best handle that? And how do you create your bidding strategy to where you can still be profitable with mobile? Because you can't ignore it, obviously, but you can't necessarily bid the same on mobile as you would on desktop because of the conversion difference. And so, you know, we look at like product listing ad data, you know, it's something like 170% year-over-year growth on mobile in terms of just in terms of clicks. And so, yeah, mobile obviously is growing, and you gotta have a game plan. And I think a lot of people have been kind of kicking that can down the road for years and knowing that they have to be good at mobile, but not probably doing enough about it to actually be good at mobile.
Yeah, I think that's still true. Like even as developed as we are on mobile at this point, it seems like there's still a lot of content that's not optimized. At least in when I'm surfing the web, that's true. The eye test.
Yeah, and that's kind of the curse, really. I mean, if you look at responsive design, which Google has said they prefer responsive sites, you know, where you get one version of the site and it dynamically changes based on the size of the screen. Google said they like it. But, you know, it's kind of in some ways cheating, right? Like you're creating one version of your site that you're hoping will be useful for someone no matter what device they're on. And really, it's probably better to think about, hey, what elements do we need to drop when it comes to the mobile version? And are we optimizing for mobile, considering mobile first? I think a lot of people just think about desktop first and then just, yeah, let's just squeeze it in for mobile.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's definitely still happening a lot. I think, you know, and I wouldn't necessarily say we drop things on mobile, but, you know, I think that thinking mobile first and then scaling up to desktop is really the best way to approach it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but you know, and I think I might, you know, we're both probably beating a bit of a dead horse here. If you do much search out there, that, you know, the best minds in the internet will tell you this too. If you're not thinking mobile first, you need to be.
No doubt.
Yeah. No, appreciate the insight. There's some fantastic stats there, and I think it just goes to show you cannot ignore mobile. If you are, you will. At this point, I'd say we're developed enough where, you know, it's actually a matured market. And that's what Benedict Evans' study basically says. This is a maturing market. It's a place where if you're not there, you are getting left behind. And so, you know, and I think there's a lot of businesses that are out there that still feel like they don't need to have a mobile presence, but I can tell you, you do. Like it people aren't even millennials, and again, I hate that term, but millennials aren't even using desktop at all in some cases. So if you want to be engaging with people digitally, you've got to be using, you've got to have a strategy for mobile.
Close it out.
Typically what we like to do at the end of our show, Brett, is we like to get, you know, some short-term recommendations, and you've already made some really great ones, but if you've got any more really, you know, here and now, like, here's what you really should go invest your money in, maybe even add a few trade-off analytics to that, that would be awesome. and then 5 years, 5 years out, you know, maybe not 5 years out. How about 2 to 3 years out? What do you expect that people really need to keep an eye on and be preparing for even now?
Hey guys, I apologize. I got dropped from the call for a minute, so I just.
Oh yeah, we didn't even know. But
oh, I was ranting, so that's probably so,
yeah.
Okay.
I just heard the two. I came back just in time to hear 2 years and 5 years out. I have no idea what you said before that.
Yeah, I think he's asking you to make some prediction about some sort of thing that we need to be keeping an eye on. 2 to 5 years out, in the, you know, specifically in search.
Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. So a couple things to think about, you know, kind of this rise of what we call queryless search results, right? Or where Google is returning search results and you never search for anything. So you look at Google Now as an example, where Google knows where you are and kind of what time of day it is and what your behavior is like. And so maybe you're walking around and it's breakfast time and they're going to show, you know, restaurants around you that serve breakfast, or you've got your phone out and you're near a train station, they're going to show you the train schedule, you know, right there on Google. And so you didn't search for those things. Google just knows that, hey, you probably will find this information useful or relevant, right? And so one of the things that we're really stressing with our clients, and that I would stress on this show, is looking at your schema or microdata and your markup. And so, you know, especially for e-commerce, looking at, you know, product schema and review schema and price schema. And basically, and I'm sure everyone on the call knows what that is, but it's the way you structure your data. So it's very clear to Google what your data is. And that's where then in the search results, Google pulls in rich snippets where if I'm searching for Nike running shoes, maybe in the organic listings there, it's got ratings and price and information about the product there, and it's always changing the things you can add to that. Well, it's becoming more and more important that you make use of structured data, because a lot of that is what fuels things like, you know, Google's knowledge graph or these queryless searches, or even, you know, as we look at, you know, product listing ads, Google Shopping, which is a huge part of what we do. Feed management, you know, so sending all your product data to Google Merchant Center so that they can pull that in and create your ads. I really think a lot of that's going to go away, and Google's just going to be able to use structured data. So they'll just be able to crawl your site, pull all the data they need if you have the correct structured data. And so you don't need feeds like we do now. And so I really think structured data is going to be huge. Also, you know, I can kind of foresee a day, you know, I'm excited about, you know, virtual reality, augmented reality, you know, wearable devices. I know Google Glass was creepy and I never owned a pair, but eventually, you know, Google's going to get right, other people are going to get right, and there's going to be wearable technology. And so I think, Phil, you mentioned, you know, image searches. But you'd foresee a day in the not too distant future where you could be walking around a store with wearable device, and based on image search, Google or whatever device you're wearing is going to be able to give you information about what you're seeing. And, you know, in those cases, I think that's going to a lot of times be driven by microdata and having good structured data where search engines can make sense of what it is that you have. And so that's my biggest piece of advice right now, is like, get your data right, because it's going to impact paid search and organic search. And yeah, I'm excited about wearables and AR and VR and how that can kind of play into the search game. And so certainly I would start there if I was going to say, hey, make an investment in your search plans and in your search future. I would kind of start there with the data.
Where can people find you online?
Yep. So check us out at omgcommerce.com. Got some resources there. Also, do check out the brand new podcast at ecommerceevolution.com. And so we talk about traffic generation and CRO and other good commerce related. And then if you're on Twitter, I'm at Brett Curry. So check it out there. And yeah, we'd love to connect.
We're so excited about that new podcast, man. Really looking forward to hearing you dive in even deeper.
Yeah,
super pumped. And it's all about, I mean, you guys know, it's all about getting good guests. And so that's what I've focused on. And so people will not have to listen to me the whole time. It'll be some pretty spectacular guests, which will be fun. But yeah, big excited about it.
That's awesome. Well, appreciate it. Thank you, Brett Curry. Again, check Brett out. Check out the new e-commerce evolution or e-commerce revolution?
E-commerce evolution.
Okay, thank you. Yep, yeah, .com and check out OMG Commerce as well. So just So much good stuff there. I think I'm going to have to go back and listen because I there's so much.
Great.
So much.
What we'll really do is have to go listen to your podcast, Brett.
Yeah, that's, I think that's what it is. Yeah, you got to digest it.
There you go.
You got to digest it. Well, we appreciate it, and that's a wrap. You did it again. You've invested an hour into learning about the future of commerce, and thanks for spending that with us. We want you to give us some feedback about today's show, so please leave that feedback on futurecommerce.fm. Click on the episode title, scroll down, and there's a discuss comment box. You can start the conversation there. If you are subscribed on iTunes, we need a 5-star review from you, and that helps us get this podcast out there for other people to hear it and for us to grow our community of marketers and merchants and people who are, you know, thought leaders in this space and growing this podcast. So I would love for you to do that. Also, if you're not subscribed, you can get it on iTunes, Google Play, or on Amazon Echo with the phrase Alexa Play Future Commerce Podcast. it's such a mouthful. Well, thank you for listening. And until next week, keep looking toward the future.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brett.